Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. The traditional vegetable diet lowers the risk of premature babies. University of Queensland in Australia. That means by consuming a diet, 3,500 women in this particular study, high in carrots, cauliflower, broccoli, pumpkins, cabbage, and green beans and potatoes, they helped them to reach full-term pregnancy without all the complications. Why? I'll go into that and a lot of other health-related stories. But then we're going to do an original article, The Big Lie. The stench of mainstream corporate media, and it's all the media, all of it, left and right. Hopefully you'll share that article with others today. Then we're going to give you Dr. Vandana Shiva, one of the most important and enlightened voices concerning the environment sustainability. She is being interviewed on France 24. It's a 12-minute interview. And she talks about Bill Gates continuing the work of Monsanto. It's a very insightful interview. And then we're going to hear from, in fact, we're going to reverse it. We're going to hear from Mother Bear Speaks. Rise up, women, rise up and be heard. That's what she's saying. She's angry. And does it resonate with you? Do you think that what she is saying is reasonable or unreasonable? Is she just on some rant out of frustration, or is there something to be said for the very quiet way that Americans are dealing with our laws being written that protect special interests but not the American people, our Constitution and Bill of Rights being eviscerated? Who's to gain? Who's to lose? Shouldn't we be concerned? That's what she's asking. You'll have a chance to call in on our talkback line and give your opinion. 888-874-4888. You'll also be able to call in and give your opinion about my commentary coming up. Then Richard Gale, one of our scholars in residence, will be here after my commentary to tell you why that so much of the information that is leading to public policies, including disastrous public policies, should be questioned and challenged. We'll give you specific examples because we, unlike other journalists and scholars, we actually study the scientific literature every day. 3 o'clock this morning, I was sending back and forth the articles from Nature, from Science, showing why aren't the media covering these stories? We're getting misinterpretations of the data, and that's dangerous. That's our show today. And you can watch any of our videos, at least the videos that we're allowed on YouTube to show you by going to this. You can go to youtube.com/prnfm, youtube.com/prn.fm, or excuse me, youtube.com/prnfm. There's no dot there. And for those of you who want to listen later, or you only have a choice to listen to this program later, that number is 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And it's just a big hello to all of the millions upon millions of people who've been tuning in to listen to this program, downloading our articles, our documentaries, and now we're posting things on a regular daily basis from the anti-aging study here, not just on anti-aging, but on something even more important that directly contributes to whether we prematurely age, develop disease, are able to slow down the aging process and live a more lively and vital life as we age. And those are self-empowerments. So those are up there also. If you go to prn.fm, scroll down, you'll see at least six, and there's more to come. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, and University of Queensland, Dr. Geet, analyzed the diets of 3,500 women and found it very simple, something you're aware of, that a traditional vegetable-rich diet, which is also rich in antioxidants, are also anti-inflammatory, meaning it turns off the cytokines in our body. That in turn reduces the risk of developing inflammatory diseases. And those are heart disease, diabetes, cancers, dementia, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, ALS, and fibromyalgia. So that's important. The more vegetables you consume and the more fruits you consume, the better it is. But in this case, it dealt with when a baby is born prematurely, they face a greater risk of metabolic and chronic diseases in adulthood. And that also will adversely affect their cognitive development and academic performance. Now, premature births, which are births before 37 weeks of gestation, are the leading cause of death in Australian children. In fact, they affect 8.5% of births every year, and it's trending upwards. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, a major peer-reviewed journal. Also, from Nagasaki University in Japan, published in the Journal of Physiological Anthropology, if you don't have enough vitamin K, you're going to have poor bone health, especially if you're a woman. So it's important that you get your green vegetables. That's where you get your vitamin K. Kale, collard greens, mustard greens, arugula, spinach. Those are all great sources of vitamin K. Or you can simply take a supplement, generally 1 to 2 milligrams, have better bones. One of the side effects that we're seeing already, because at 4 weeks, we're almost halfway through, this week will be fourth week and we're halfway through our study here on campus, is that people came in with severe osteoporosis. They did not know that the osteoporosis, they didn't know that their bones were so brittle. But when we do one of our entry tests, we measure bone density and the percentage of bone the person has, muscle, fat, water, etc. And some of the people are just, they're now increasing their bone density tremendously. I mean, getting them out of harm's way in just 4 weeks. So we're very pleased about that. And again, all the results will be made available to the general public as soon as peer review publication occurs, which won't be long from now. The number of steps per day, not the speed at which you walk them, is linked to your death rate. This is an observational study. They found the benefit of steps added for women and men. This is from the National Cancer Institute. And the new study looked at 5,000 people, and they found that how many steps you walk in a day, and by the way, you can put these little meters on in your pocket and attach them to your leg, and at the end of the day, they tell you how many steps you took. And among the participants, they found that fewer than 4,000 steps a day, your death rate was 76.7 per thousand people. And in distance, 4,000 steps is roughly 3 kilometers. But among the 1,727 people who managed up to 9,000 or 8,000 steps a day, the death rate plummeted to 21 per 1,000 people. My goodness, that's a huge, huge difference statistically. So, how about doing this? Why don't we all try to walk an hour every morning and a half hour after dinner every evening? That would give us around 9,000 steps. And that would be terrific for us. Because then, if they're, you know, dropping it to 21%, with doing it that way, we could probably drop it down around 10% from the original high of 76. So A lot of people go to work early. They get on a subway, train, or bus, or a car, and then they commute. They're sitting. They get to their office more often than not. They're sitting. So people are not doing the walking they should. Then add in walking as fast as you can, and that's going to lower your death rate even more. So that's good news. Also, from Stanford University comes a new study about exercising restoring youthful properties to muscle stem cells of old mice in the Stanford study. A nightly power walk or any kind of exercise enhances muscle repair capacity in older mice. Only older mice saw this benefit, which the researchers found is due to the rejuvenation of the animal's muscle stem cells. Well, if it works in animals, why not it work in humans as well? And we're actually measuring that in this current study in the blood workup. This was an MD, PhD, professor of neurology and neurological sciences and director of the Stanford's Glenn Center for Biological Aging. And he says that they saw restoration of youthfulness and tissue repair. So here's what I would suggest. I would suggest that we begin the process of gradually. You don't start fast, you don't start hard, you don't start long. You start gently, but you start to take your pulse, your resting pulse, stop in the middle of exercise, take your medium pulse, and at the end, and how long does it take you to recover the pulse? That's very indicative of whether or not you have any underlying heart condition. That said, then if over a period of 3 months, you start adding miles each week and do it week by week, and then intensity of the exercise and the speed of exercise, you could be laying down new specific stem cells and into the muscle stem cell area. And that ends up along the muscle fibers. And that would help you, those muscles, be younger, stronger. Because we're also overcoming biases, aging biases, that the older we get, the weaker we become. We get the skin aging, the hair aging, the face aging, the internal body's all aging, but weakness, fatigue are common. That is not normal to the aging process. It is, however, normal to our lifestyle process. If you want to see some examples, and by the way, we're still asking for examples. If you are a good example of someone over the age of 50 and send a photograph and a story to go with it, we'll post it up on PRN.fm. If you go scroll down the page, you'll see we had a bunch of people and then they stopped. So please send us your stories. If you've overcome major disease using healthy lifestyle, we want to know about it. We want to share that and to motivate other people. But I started by just putting some of my own photographs up there, and then John Cusin photographs, and Celia and other people. So, and there's one of Luann Panisi, and who else is in that picture? And we had just finished the state championship. Yeah, Luann won the gold. I won the gold. John won, I believe, a silver. And we're there showing you that because you're getting older in age chronologically, it doesn't mean that you have to get older biologically. And the other picture I took was just taken before I came down to Texas for this retreat. So you can look and feel and biologically be 30, even 40 years younger at the biological level than you are at the chronological level. That is the good news, and we should be following that advice. But unfortunately, 97% of adults, according to the latest study, don't do much of anything except promote disease. From British Columbia Cancer Agency comes a study about how low-carbohydrate diets with soy protein and fish or fish oil slow the growth of established NNK-induced lung tumors. That's important. That's good to know. That means that people, but let's just broaden it out. Let's just not say that NNK-induced lung nodules, but let's just say anyone with lung diseases, anyone with anything from emphysema and asthma to COPD to lung cancer, everything that you can do to help the health of those lungs is a positive. And so therefore, a healthy plant-based diet is a part of that, and that's what this is showing. From Lund, L-U-N-D, University, which is in Sweden, mindfulness is just as effective as cognitive behavioral therapy for a broad range of mental conditions. Now, I'll just give you a little background on this, because mindfulness therapy really works. You can help a lot of mental conditions, especially people who are depressed, people with anxiety and high stress-related disorders, and that's probably half the American population or more right now. I'm hearing from people I know, now these are friends of mine, who because of the quarantine have been in a close proximity in a house or an apartment with people who they haven't spent all that much time with, and are now finding out that they don't have as much in common as they had, because they had opportunities before to both people go to work and then taking care of the other responsibilities of children. And now all that's different. Now they're just two people together or two people with kids. And boy, are they under stress. So what do I do? What do I do? So I said, well, you could all do mindfulness together. And mindfulness is easy to do. And it has enormous benefits. A lot of people think, well, I need psychotherapy or psychiatric therapy, or I need drugs for my depression or anxiety or stress. No, you don't. You do need individual therapy that you can use mindfulness as a personal therapy. Just being able to be mindful. What is the purpose of your life? How are you able to live that life and be focused on today, even in limited spaces? How can you disembrace from depression, anxiety, and stress-related disorders by being mindful of the environment you're in, being able to say, I can't change my environment at this moment, so therefore let me allow this environment to overcome me. Breathing deeply, clearing your mind, playing some wonderful, to your own taste, soothing music, something that slows it all down. Slow your breathing down. Deeper breathing. Slower eating, slower food preparation, taking your time reading, writing, journaling. This is all mindfulness. Different types on a spectrum, and it all is beneficial. And finally, from Qingdao University in China comes a study looking at a meta-analysis. They're saying that high circulating vitamin D, you have a lower risk of liver cancer. So most people don't get enough vitamin D. They don't get out in the sun enough. And when they do go in the sun, they're over-lathered with some of the sunscreens, which themselves can be toxic. We need some direct sunlight, not excessive, not to where you sunburn, because that's where you end up causing your skin cancer. But I would say about 45 minutes of sun over about one-third of the body, you can produce about 30,000 units or more of vitamin D from that. So if you're not able to do that, then take some supplements. They're inexpensive and non-toxic. One last one, and this is in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Heart Association's Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. This was a study at the University of Washington, and they showed that bad air, meaning polluted air, will adversely affect your good cholesterol and increase your heart disease risk. Now, why is this important? First, because when we realize how many Americans are living with some form of air pollution that they've just adapted to, and we've been doing this for at least 50 years, and those on the West Coast, California and up, you have even more particulate matter that's toxic because you're getting China's coal power plants, bringing that right across the ocean. Yeah. And now think of the people in that one area of Italy that had the highest incidence of pollution in all of Europe. Now, they're also an older population there, and they had a tendency to be sedentary, smoke, eat a bad diet, and drink alcohol. So as a result, they're very susceptible to death from heart disease, cancers, emphysema, high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. Now throw in the coronavirus, and that tips the scale. But as the Italian scientist, medical doctor, and expert in the field said yesterday in a commentary I read, that if a person falls on a railroad track and a train runs over them, right now they would probably be listed as dying of coronavirus. That's how insane it's got. So one of the things we must stop doing is conflating statistics. We should keep those who've died of the coronavirus with no underlying comorbidities, meaning they have no other diseases, and those are one set of statistics, and then those who are dying of other conditions, no matter what else happens, and they happen to have the coronavirus present, then we have to ask, all right, what's the difference between the two? If you have one person dying at average age of 80, and that's the average age of those with the coronavirus, and then you have healthy people who are infected with coronavirus, or those who are older and are not infected, then maybe they have a natural immunity based upon what the body has seen and rejected or killed the antigen. And that's normally how it works. That's why one day I was, this was interesting because this was the publisher of the Amsterdam News, Bill Tatum, and he was at the Tri-State Healing Center. And we had a lot of different rooms. We had Dr. Amar Gadol, the holistic dentist. We had Susan, the nurse practitioner. We had the Colin therapist, Mitch Proffman, the chiropractor. We had acupuncturists, body-mind medicine. Then we had our regular, larger offices with our medical staff, surgeons and everyone else. We didn't do surgery, but we had a surgeon who was working there. And one room was set aside for people with AIDS, defining illnesses. They all wanted to be together. We said, fine. The other one was all other kind of diseases. So every evening I would go in there, because that's when they came in, generally at around 5 o'clock to midnight, and there would be like three groups come in, generally about 2 hours per time in there for getting the therapies, mainly intravenous vitamin C drips, glutathione pushes, ozone, all forms of herbal botanicals. We had a homeopathic physician. So I'm sitting there one night, and there was a man who was just a skeleton, and he had Kaposi sarcoma. It was on his arms, his neck, and he had pneumocystis and pneumonia. He had about 14 opportunistic infections. All of those could kill him. And Bill was talking with some of the African-Americans that were in there getting the therapy. And Gary said, man, you're putting your life at risk. You're sitting there holding someone's hands. That's irresponsible, isn't it? I said, no. Why not? I said, because I know my immune system. I'm the one who's getting the highest dose of vitamin C, and I know what that does to my body, and glutathione pushes. Everything they're getting, I first tried on myself for 2 years, every day. People would have been amazed had there been Skype back then to see me sitting there with hooked up for 4 hours with an IV drip of 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C. I said, I wanted to see what it would do to a healthy person, and then I chose some people who were near death, who were patients, and it helped them. So there's a good track record that this is stimulating the immune system in a good way. And I said, so I know my immune system. So yes, I'm coming into contact with all kinds of microorganisms, but my body is able to recognize them, and it's strong enough that it can defeat them. I don't have any better immune system than anyone else. And if I went out and started eating hot dogs, hamburgers, stayed all night, did drugs and alcohol, came home wasted, got up the next day, went to a job I didn't like, had a relationship that was toxic, yeah, well then I'd probably be in the chair being treated for some disease instead of being on the other side sitting here helping the people who are sick. We've forgotten that. We have forgotten that the best way to help prevent any disease is being mindful of our habits and our hygiene, but also our immune system. And we don't even have that discussion. No one in the media is willing to have that discussion. It's all about the vaccine, the vaccine, the vaccine. It's never about, well, what can we do And we're not doing it to defend ourselves, as if there's no defense. The only defense is lock yourself away. And that's just a lie. Now, either the people in the media are disingenuous, or they're ignorant of this fact, intentionally so, or they're completely aware that the immune system matters. But in this case, the talking points are, don't talk about anything except the savior of this will be a vaccine or a patented medicine. So that's why it's important to keep your immune system strong, because then you'll be the school teacher that when the other teachers, because of their students passing around a coronavirus, but not this coronavirus, the cold or flu, influenza, they'll be the ones going through a season without getting sick. Same way with students. So, just something to think about. That's the latest on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to share with you a commentary. It's not a long commentary, but it's an important one, because I'm concerned that the average person trusts too much authority figures, media authority figures, celebrity authority figures, government authority figures, doctors, scientists, without doing their homework to see, is there any potential for bias? Is there any conflict of interest? Is there any agenda we're not aware of that's motivating them to take the particular approach they are? Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Tomorrow, you don't want to miss tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's show will give you insights and information that no media in the Americas or in Europe, in Asia, is sharing with you. We will. We will have Josh Phillip, senior investigative reporter of Epoch Times. He went undercover. He interviewed people, scientists all over the world, and we have some really revealing facts about the coronavirus that no one is talking about. Proof that we've been lied to, and proof that we should be extremely conscientious of not following official policy without challenging it. That is tomorrow. We'll also be playing probably around a 20 to 25 minute segment of his investigation. And this will be the place to watch it and listen and learn tomorrow, an exclusive. But now I want to share with you an article by Gail, who will be on after this myself. It is entitled The Big Lie, The Stench of Mainstream Corporate Media. And boy, do we need this more now than ever before. Why is that? Well, first, we've got the liberal media. The New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, The Daily Beast, Alternet, Mother Jones, Daily Cause, and others. And here's what Chris Hedges had to say about them. Quote, they betrayed the core values the liberals used to define themselves, the rule of law, the safeguarding of civil liberties, the protection of unions, the preservation of social welfare programs, environmental accords, financial regulation, a defiance of unjust war and torture, the abolition of drone wars, etc. End quote. Now, on the flip side, the conservative media like Fox, Sinclair, and Christian broadcasting networks equally forsakes the most basic principles of human decency and compassion. During the early decades of the 20th century, these ideals and causes would have been a standard platform that defined the progressive agenda from a liberal and humanist perspective. Modern progressivism's roots began with La Folliette's Weekly, a publication founded by Senator Robert La Folliette in 1909. By the way, it's still in print, but it's known as The Progressive. It remains a leading voice against war, militarism, oligarchical rule, and corporate interests that have hijacked and increasingly control Congress and the White House. When we consider the mainstream media networks and publications, left and right, how many have publicly expressed opposition to the escalation of America's wars and regime changes? Or how about greenhouse gas emissions? Or the lobbying of Big Pharma, the agrochemical and fossil fuel industries, and Wall Street? Who has always bailed out first? Who has never bailed out? Such corporate media outlets can't be found because in a full-blown oligarchy, they are the government's and the private financier's partners in laying the foundation for a totalitarian nation. They are fully and actively complicit. The media is incapable of reporting to Americans the true state of our country's domestic and cultural affairs and the harsh decline back to a developing nation. Both conservative and liberal media have failed to create a believable story that reflects the actual economic and social conditions of average Americans because it has not been able to move beyond the red-blue divide, identity politics in the muck and mire of this divisiveness, the woke culture of political correctness, the abolishment of free speech if you don't agree with it, and offense by all words. All of our institutions today are bereft of ethical and spiritual substance. The right suffers from pre-rational superstitions and anti-intellectualism that has turned the U.S. into a laughingstock among developed nations. The left suffers from a highbrow intellect and a poverty of spirit that was once and could be again a moral and revolutionary force to relieve suffering and fight on behalf of peace and human rights and civil rights, but now is a primary cause of the loss of human rights and civil rights. If you doubt that statement, why don't you take the next flight to Libya, walk the streets of a city that was once the most important city in Africa, with the oldest population, the highest sense of literacy, free health care, and today it is one of the worst in Africa. Has anyone apologized for that? And that was from a liberal president and influencing a liberal State Department and the power of the military-industrial complex backing it all. No apologies ever from any agency, not from the FBI, the CIA, the National Security Agency, the White House, no matter who's in charge or which president, which regime, it is always the same. Although most alternative liberal media disagree on particular policies, when election time comes around, all realistic principles are abandoned. Given the ease with which the liberal media betrays its stated ideals, we must call into question the integrity of the entire political establishment altogether and ask whether it is wise to compromise. Did it really surprise anyone that Bernie Sanders is now endorsing Joe Biden? Did it surprise any of you that Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton? Did it surprise any of you that he and his group of woke political correct activists actually don't have a clue about what the average American wants and hence they didn't support him? If you've bought into the mainstream media and support their either of the two parties now dominating Washington, then by extension, we believe that you have been condoning across the board the government and corporate America's continue to deny the severity of climate change and global warming threats and therefore accept there is no urgency to take drastic measures to curb the rate of greenhouse gas emissions because no one in the United States in a position of power has done that. Not in Congress, not the White House. They will give euphemisms that they're for, you know, changing the outcome of global warming, but they do nothing to insist that the industry is responsible and the people's lives and choices that are all contributing to this degradation of our environment and the irreversible plunge to stop what we're doing individually and collectively so that we can get some sustainable existence in the future. Right now, we have none of that. Also, we are supporting the failure to cover the actual human environmental risks of hydrofracking, tar, sand, oil, and pipelines being expanded, and instead only focusing on the spectacle of Standing Rock protests. We also support the construction of new nuclear power reactors, believing in the myth and propaganda of clean coal, condoning indiscriminate hydrofracking in environmentally sensitive areas, and allowing these industries to be subsidized by we, the taxpayer. Also, we have shown that we tolerate illegal wiretapping and a systematic surveillance of Americans by government intelligence agencies in allegiance with private cybersecurity corporations. By ignoring the government's regressive surveillance efforts, it is being compliant with violating privacy laws so that no citizen is protected from monitoring email, mobile phones, the internet, etc., because every citizen in the government's eyes is a potential threat to the country's national security. By completely ignoring the end of the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 by the Obama administration and now expanded under Trump, which forbids the U.S. military from being deployed on domestic soil and acting against American citizens, the media is further advancing the military policing of the population. The media's silence permits the U.S. to transform into a police state. State by state, county by county, township by township, police departments are increasingly militarized by the U.S. Armed Forces and then become extensions of the Defense Department. Rarely does a federal or intelligence whistleblower ever appear on the mainstream media. Its negligence, in fact, supports the silencing and prosecution of honest, diligent people who come forward to lay out government corruption that they have personally witnessed, and yet they are not protected. They are vilified, arrested, thrown in jail. Think of Manning. Think of Snowden. Think of all the others. And that shows that we are complicit in protecting criminal activities and corruption in governmental agencies. And it is rampant. It is endemic. It is a pandemic of the big stupid, knowing that these agencies are self-serving, biased, and extremely compromised in their integrity. And yet we turn a complete blind eye to it. The media never touches it. We ignore the corruption and funding behind entire private prison systems that relies upon an infinite growth model of inmates and the criminalization of poverty. Yes, we were supposed to have been beyond the poverty prisons, debtors' prisons, but we're not. We're back, and not a voice crying against it. Consistently, we act against the rights of workers and unions, favoring treaters like NAFTA, GATT, and the forthcoming revitalized Trans-Pacific and Transatlantic partnerships that further sell American workers in return for greater profits to the 1%. We give preferential treatment to the medical insurance industry. These are pure parasitic. There is no need for one-third of the $3.5 trillion spent each year on medical care to be given to these individuals, and yet they actually write the laws like Obamacare. They wrote it, not Obama. And this continues to contribute nothing to the prevention or treatment of any disease. When I say nothing, I mean absolutely, positively nothing. Nor does the medical industrial complex help prevent disease. And this silence about the private medical establishment writing the health care laws in this country has been known, but it has been avoided as a point of discussion. Completely complicit are we in advancing the pharmaceutical agenda that vaccines are effective and safe and should be mandated nationally? If so, why is it that Richard Gale and I have written over 54 articles showing specific science that there is no effective vaccine that is completely safe or completely effective for anyone? And yet you would never know that if you listen to the media or read the New York Times. We also allow the private agrochemical industry headed by Monsanto and DuPont to write the agricultural laws in the country so that genetically modified crops and organisms are wrongfully considered safe for human and animal consumption and carry no risk to the environment. Thank Obama for that. We deny the Federal Reserve's role in demolishing America's middle class and protecting the Wall Street's oligarchic control over the Fed and the U.S. Treasury at the expense of the public. We're judging Wall Street banks more worthy of forgiveness to receive debt relief and assistance from taxpayers than debt forgiveness to Americans who are underwater in their mortgages and credit and student and car loans and small business debts. We forgive none of that. We do not bail out any of that. There's no quantitative easing for any of those people. It all goes in one direction to a small group, and that's the way it's been and will always be. And yet the American public thinks that may be normal. No protests. We have gross failure to independently analyze the adverse effects on the domestic economy and society from trillion-dollar bailouts to Wall Street and the mega corporations. We're increasing America's military budget at home and abroad rather than feeding the nation's starving children, of which there are at least 16 million. We're helping the 3.1 million homeless children as if they don't count. And as a result, we are not helping the number of homeless, which are increasing, and now it will increase exponentially. And think of all those Americans, just working-class Americans, who have suffered at the hands of government's compliance with Wall Street's disaster capitalism. We've ignored the need for independent investigations and hearings into current and past four administrations, into the invasions of sovereign countries and covert efforts to fuel regime change, all illegal by any international standard. And this is not a few people, this is the entire military-industrial complex and all of the complicit people inside the Washington Beltway. It's a dank, dirty sewer. Do not insult the word swamp. Swamps all over the world are living biological systems. They do not invade our home. They are not lethal to outsiders. They coexist. We don't have a swamp in Washington or corporate America, Wall Street. We have an overflowing, toxic cesspool. Ignoring the thousands of homicides and suicides committed by American soldiers and veterans who have been abused and forgotten by the U.S. government since the launch of the war against terror. But do you see Bush, Cheney, any of the people complicit, Rumsfeld, any of those people held accountable? No, and you will not, as you will not see Obama or Clinton or anyone else held accountable. And this is all based upon they all serving America's imperial ambitions. The failure to criticize despotic regimes that the U.S. supports with dismal human rights records, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Bahrain, Israel's apartheid state with Palestine, Brazil, Colombia, India. From the perspective of universal values and higher spiritual ethics, these are among both Democrats and Republicans' many faults. Many might perceive these charges as indicators of progress. However, since the captured pundits pretend to align themselves with faux and disingenuous progressive values, the media must be held accountable for its blind ignorance in giving voice to the deep state and thereby undermining constitutional rights and personal freedoms. Until Americans summon the courage to stand up and demand an end to the deep state's corporate and intelligence stranglehold on our institutions of power, we are almost guaranteed to head further towards the complete cultural and economic collapse we are now in. Today's commentary is entitled The Big Lie, The Stench of Mainstream Corporate Media. It is posted on PRN.fm. Please download it and share it. Joining us on call now is Richard Gale. Richard, what is of concern to you and should be concerned to all researchers, journalists, and scholars concerning the mishandling of the corona pandemic?
Oh, good afternoon, Gary. I think one question a lot of people have, and we'll just keep this part very short, is where did this originate from? And I think it's wise for people to withhold any kind of judgment at this time. viruses do mutate. They can be transmitted from animal to human, and now we're discovering human to animal. There is plenty of evidence in the past of different strains of coronavirus having been transmitted from wet markets or from animal markets to humans. So that's one hypothesis. And yet there is some good evidence showing that it may have been engineered. It may have come from a leak from a laboratory, not something intentional. Rutgers University professor, this Richard Ebright, a biosecurity expert, has written and suggested that this could very much be an accidental release based on the research, based on the evidence of Wuhan having worked with these coronaviruses in the past. And this has also been restated by professor of cell biology and anatomy in New York Medical College, kind of stating pretty much the same thing. Well, one thing we're not doing is we're not learning from other countries. And I don't want to spend too much on Trump's failure in dealing with this too much because it's back in January 31st. I mean, if you just think of the timeline, back in January 31st, the first person, a man in Seattle, contracts the virus, is diagnosed as positive, and Trump is coming saying it would disappear in April because of warm weather. A month later, February 26th, he's saying, oh, we'll only have about 5 people infected. And then 3 days later, there's the first coronavirus death. March 9th, there's still no tests. We're still not mobilizing and having many tests. We're already a month and a half out from the first case, and Trump is saying that we have 4 million tests will be sent. In actual fact, there are only 4,000 that were sent. And even today, now we're in the middle of March, and the hospitals and nurses do not have sufficient number of PPEs or protective gear, such as sterile gowns and masks. They're being rationed. They're rationing this equipment. So this is overall, this has been a real debacle. Just from the from protecting the hospital workers and the healthcare workers that are being involved in this, and being able to have any kind of reliable data. Because you can't have any reliable data if you don't even have tests that either are that accurate or sufficient number of tests, which is why there's estimates that perhaps a factor of 10 could be, as we saw in Italy, could be the actual number of cases that are going undiagnosed. Who is immune from coronavirus? This is another big one. And it also shows that there's so much about this virus that we really do not fully understand. There was a study that came out from Shanghai Public Health Clinical Center looking at the immune responses of among patients who recovered from just mild COVID infections. And what they were discovering was that there's a certain, we want to be able to test for neutralizing antibodies. Our body produces different kinds of antibodies, but neutralizing antibodies are NABs. Now, that's the very specific antibody that is directly related to the disease's causative agent. So that's the important word there. And that would be like the main antigen of the virus that is contributing to the infection, and in this case, the severe acute respiratory syndrome. However, what they were discovering was that 30% of these people did not show much of this antibody at all, suggesting that there may be other antibodies we haven't identified yet, or other immune factors that could be contributing to the recovery of these particular individuals, a small percent that did not have this neutral antibody at all. And so if we can't even come to that level of scientific information, the thought of being able to develop an effective vaccine is reduced dramatically. And also, the same study also showed that these neutralizing antibodies for the coronavirus only peak between 10 and 15 days following the disease onset. So that's compared to like flu and other viruses, that's a very long delay. This is something that's some of these little mysterious properties of this particular virus that we really do not fully understand. There's been studies before looking at, trying to understand the antibody response to coronaviruses. In fact, the first study that I know of goes back to 1990. So this is 30 years ago when they were actually inoculating people, volunteers, with the coronavirus. At that time, it was just the common cold. We didn't have SARS. We did not have the Middle East, Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, MERS. So this is when it was just a very typical common cold. And what they were discovering was that even after immunization, inoculation, that symptoms were less severe, but they were still catching the common cold, and they would have to be inoculated or immunized again a year later. So these early studies show that the immune response to this virus is not particularly strong, and it's kind of forms we only have a very preliminary educated guess that we can make for what the results or the effectiveness or safety of a vaccine would be based on the data that we currently have. So this could be a huge disaster. And what we're hearing now from people like some of the real pro-vaccine people like Paul Offit and Peter Hotez at Baylor University, they're speaking out very publicly right now about the dangers of pushing forward with a vaccine. And this is something we have to be very, very wary about, in that we have this now self-appointed vaccine czar, Bill Gates, who has no medical background whatsoever. He's not appointed by any federal health agency, but only because he's one of the billionaire oligarchs in our nation, that he is able to assume for himself his role of being the expert in the vaccines and being able to actually influence and push policies because of his influence. So, and of course, that goes right back into the Wall Street and the pharmaceutical stock interests as well. So that would be my summary, Gary, that I would offer.
Insights. Thank you very much, Richard. I see by the clock we do not have time to play Vandana Shiva. That's a 12-minute. We'll do that on either tomorrow or the next day. And also, I don't want to run over for some of our local stations getting off within the next 3 minutes. So let me just summarize some of the things that are happening right now. That this is a research paper we received today, early this morning, from Medical News Today. And it's talking about when they looked at several institutions in the United States and in China, and they took a look at some people who had died of multiple organ failure after receiving care for the severe COVID-19 coronavirus. And the question is, the majority were almost all older people. Okay. They had medical histories with underlying morbid cofactors, meaning heart disease, high blood pressure, emphysema. And they also found that 72.9%, almost 73%, were male, and all of them were senior citizens. And most of them had either heart disease or diabetes or other chronic complications. So here's just a basic question. Wouldn't it make sense, in order to get people back to work and back into the society, if we had an accurate test, and that accurate test, not the one we currently have, which can have up to a 70% false positive, meaning you can be tested and say, oh, you've got the coronavirus, but it could be 70% wrong. That would devastate a lot of people and put them into harm's way because of unnecessary medical intervention. So if we had an accurate test and tested the entire population, which I believe we should, and then those who test negative and who show no signs of any illness at all and don't have a history of heart disease and cancer, et cetera, they should be allowed to go back to work, open their businesses, as long as they follow just basic hygiene procedures. For example, there is a baseball hat. You can buy it. What costs $10? I just bought some with a little mask on it. It's not a mask. It's like a plastic shield, and it covers the whole face from ear to ear and clear down to your chin. That's better than a mask for the simple reason that anything that is coming at a person is going to block it, and anything a person may have going out is going to block it. Now, if you want to be double careful, then you just put a mask on your nose and mouth like a 99 to 100 mask in blocking, and then you have that. The two together would allow people with gloves and proper hygiene of cleaning surfaces and hands to be able to get back into working with food. Restaurants could open, and you could put this in all the different industries. And there are air filters that are commercial air filters. These are not for the home. I use them in my home, but you could use them. They run anywhere from $400 to $800, depending upon how many square feet you're trying to protect. But those could be in all the workplaces as well. So it's just a matter of doing that. And then if you test someone and they test positive and they have underlying medical conditions, why not have specific protocols to help people with those comorbidities, heart disease, diabetes, emphysema? So when they're going into critical care facilities, which we should have and build if we don't, then they're going to be treated for their underlying health conditions and therefore not just for the coronavirus. Because right now, there's nothing being done for those underlying conditions to change the outcome, just respirators. And that's not going to reverse emphysema, heart disease, diabetes. I'm talking about conditions that we can reverse, and we've shown it. If they're too limited in their knowledge, let them speak with Dean Ornish, one of the greatest cardiologists, if not the greatest cardiologist in American history. He's reversed 9 out of 9 people who had to have a heart transplant. Well, he has protocols. We have protocols. I have protocols. There's plenty of good protocols around, so we could actually help not just reverse the coronavirus outcome, we could reverse their health outcome and do something that we're not doing now for these people. Just a suggestion, but at least what we're doing now is simply not feasible, and we're not looking at the unintended consequences, a nation that will go back, people whose lives will be completely shattered. They're already broke. They're already under debt. This is going to throw them into bankruptcy. And small businesses that are the backbone of American workforce, small businesses employ more people than all the corporate CEOs, the Fortune 500 company, I should say, combined, and the government combined. Not a thing's being done at this moment to help them. What happens when they, you know, you give them a few $100 or a few $1,000, that doesn't pay the back rent. That doesn't pay to reopen their business. So probably anywhere from 50 to 70% of all small businesses that have been closed will stay closed because they're going to go broke, all because of foolishness, of overreacting out of ignorance and causing massive fear. So some thoughts. We'll be back tomorrow with a very powerful show. You will not want to miss tomorrow's show. Have a nice day, everyone.